It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Chris Herndon joins me now on assignment in Minnesota, site of tonight's game between Minnesota and the Dallas Mavs. That's just a coincidence. Chris, what are we listening to?
There's a Piece of Pie by the Rob Roys, little doo-wop classic. I wrote about pizza today.
Yes, you did. How did the move go yesterday?
The move yesterday went okay. You got through that day. It's not a one-day process, we've discovered.
It's certainly not.
But everything got moved into the house. You know, the guy showed up and moved everything into the house. Now we have to move things within the house. We definitely have way, way too much stuff. And so we're going to take a van load of stuff to Chicago when we take our, you know, this summer our daughter's going to move out of the dorms into an apartment.
I see.
But then we'll still have too much stuff. And so, you know, I posed a new rule yesterday for every one item that comes into the house that's non-consumable, two items got to go out.
Oh.
You know, maybe, biggest issue.
Yeah, go ahead.
Biggest issue was that the box spring on my wife and I, our bed, will not go up the stairs. So we're going to have to reconsider our bed situation. There may be some double switch going on with who has what bed.
You know, the problem with this new rule you have, it's like Grizzlies, a consolidation trades. They're not easy to make. You know, the sending two away and getting one back is not, it's easy in theory.
And in our case, the obstacle is not finding a trade partner, it's willpower.
Right. So. All right, before I get to the NBA, obviously you got a big game in Minnesota tonight. T-Wolves will be hosting the Mavs. You did write about pizza today. All of this comes in wake of the preposterous ranking of pizza places.
I mean, we were working on this anyway. I can
really?
Imagine we didn't do this. You think
I was going to say, how
did
this get whipped
after some
up?
Stupid
yeah.
survey came
right,
out.
Right, right. Oh, so you were already, I was thinking about this. You have had a lot on your plate, as it were, anyway. I can't imagine that you've went to all these pizza places and did these interviews while you were unpacking your pod. But anyway, two pieces up today, and also a pizza bracket up today at the Daily Memphian if you want to vote for Memphis's best pizza. It's a 32-person bracket. I already saw that one of the comments is complaining that we left out Elwood Shack, so you can't have everyone in there. But I want to start with this. You wrote a piece about Memphis-style pizza. Now, I asked Jeffrey if he knew what Memphis-style pizza was. He said he had no idea. He guessed maybe barbecue pizza, but you stipulate or posit that there is a Memphis-style pizza.
Yeah, this is something I sort of suggested to Jennifer Biggs a few years ago. We were doing a pizza pod, and she sort of stopped and said, you know, I've never thought about that, but I think you're right. And two of the three places I wrote about, like, say themselves, that they proclaim themselves Memphis-style pizza. And it's, you know, it's X-Lines, it's Broadway, and it's Fox Ridge Pizza. And they all had, I would get into a little bit of the detail or try to, the backstory of this, but they all have the exact same style pizza. There are connections to some degree between them. And it is a style pizza that I think developed in Memphis, and as far as I can tell, specific to Memphis. My theory on it, and I feel like I'm on firm ground on this, although you can't exactly locate it, but my theory is that it's essentially a cross-pollination of Coletta's barbecue pizza, which is sort of the original Memphis pizza Memphis's contribution to global pizza culture starts there. But it's a cross-pollination between that and what is known as Midwestern tavern-style pizza. Like, when you go to Chicago, you think of deep dish, but there's another kind of local pizza in Chicago that's thin crust, and it's tavern-style, and it's cut into squares, it's cheese on top and cheese to the edges. And the Memphis pizza is basically that with a lot more meat, which necessitates a thicker crust. So to me, it's the Coletta's thick crust and heavy meat ideal crossed with the Midwestern tavern style approach.
So
and I think that's where it comes from.
Is the Midwestern tavern the same as Detroit, or is that different?
No, Detroit's different. And in fact, we had pizza here last night in St. Paul, and it was that sort of tavern style. I'll probably tweet out a photo of that at some point if I ever get on social media today. But no, Detroit's a different kind of thing because that's more of an oblong kind of pizza, a little bit thicker. But like, if you go, like, I don't remember the place. There's a place near to the Paul campus. We had pizza like Pat's or something, and it's not deep dish. It's like tavern style, and it's bad. A lot of the old school pizza places in the Twin Cities are like that. And again, it's thin crust, but the cheese goes all the way to the edges. There's no like edge of crust around the end, and it's all cut into squares, and that's sort of what it is.
Which, by the way, chronologically, Coletta's, X Lines, Broadway, Fox Ridge, maybe you don't remember off the top of your head. What's the like, who was here first?
Well, Coletta's was. And sort of pizza and Memphis starts with Coletta's. That's the story that's been written and story that we have written. So I didn't want to just write that same story.
Remind me of that story, though.
Yeah. Well, what I wrote is something that I don't think has ever been written, which is why I did that. But Coletta's is, pizza was introduced to Memphis via Coletta's. And it was an Italian restaurant, and they started serving pizza. What happened broadly with pizza in America is GIs came home from World War II. GIs who had been stationed in Italy and had pizza in Italy came back home and popularized pizza in the United States. So I'm not saying there was no pizza in America before 1940, but generally speaking, the pizza boom in America starts during World War II, and it's GIs coming back. And with Coletta's in particular, I think it was more the 1950s, and basically they had someone, there was some connection where they got with someone from Chicago who came down and sort of taught them how to make pizza. So they started putting Memphis barbecue on top of their pizza, and that's the first place, as far as anyone knows, anywhere where there was a barbecue pizza. And now you can find barbecue pizza everywhere, but it's usually like, you know, more of a chicken pizza. It's not like Coletta's does it.
Were X Lines, Broadway, and Fox Ridge, which are the three that you identify as quintessential Memphis-style pizzas, are they all basic contemporaneous with each other?
Well, they all trace back to this other place that was the Raleigh Pizza Parlor during the 1970s. And that style of pizza and in some cases the specific menus you'll find today dates back to that pizza place in the 1970s. And Walter Exline bought the Raleigh Pizza Parlor in 1974, I guess. This is their 50th anniversary. So he bought the Raleigh Pizza Parlor in late 1973 and reopened it as X Lines Pizza, but with the same menu and the same style in 74. Broadway Pizza, it was started by someone who had been an employee of the Raleigh Pizza Parlor, and according to the current owner, who's the daughter of the original Broadway owner, was the foster daughter of the people who owned Raleigh Pizza. The Fox Ridge connection is a little sketchier, and like I was told stories about that, but I was told them off the record for some reason, so I guess I can't get into it. There is like deep family history, like handed down. This is a little bit of Hatfield and McCoy situation, to be honest with you. But my point was not to pit these places against each other. It was to celebrate them in unison, because I think 50 years later, most people don't care.
Right.
Like who had it first and who did who wrong and all that. But there is some of that in the weeds of this.
So what characterizes Memphis style is heavy meat and all the way to, it's all loaded up to the edge. I like the one quote from someone, one of the people there, one of these places said, a lot of places a pizza will serve two people. That's not the Memphis style pizza. Like it's heavy. But the crust is what? The crust is a chewier crust or a thinner crust?
It's a sort of a mid-sized crust. It's not deep dish. It's not thin. It's not even like your pan tossed. It's a chewier, like, I don't know, half-inch thick kind of crust. A lot of people do not like the crust. But the crust is required to
lift
to
all that.
Handle all the meat. And I think that's also a reason. I think that cut into squares also sort of comes from the tavern, Midwestern tavern style. But it's also necessitated by the amount of toppings, because these pizzas are so thick and so heavy with stuff that if you've got a large, and the small ones actually are cut into normal slices, triangular slices.
Huh.
But if you tried to get a medium or a large of one of these and cut them into slices, there's no way you're eating that. You're not picking it up. It's just falling apart.
A lot of good stuff in the story, including the like Broadway. It never occurred to me that Broadway used to be jam-packed with, what did they say, kids from college kids or whatever.
Then Rhodes students.
Yeah, Rhodes students. Then Sam Cooper.
Or Southwestern, probably.
Yeah, then Sam Cooper was constructed, which all of a sudden Broadway, and this is a story about Broadway more than just the pizza place, and it was deserted, and now it's come to life again because so much, you know, as sort of this separate area, and they have giant apartment complexes about to go up over there, so there's a lot of good stuff in the piece. Go ahead.
That's something I was particularly interested in, and it's slightly tangential, so I could have gone more, and I didn't go as much as I could have. But there's an element to the way that these places have changed with the city, in the sense that Fox Ridge Pizza started at, like, Mendenhall and Knight Arnold, like, in the Fox Meadows neighborhood. And now it's on Brookhaven Circle, like, right across from Andrew Michael. And, you know, X-Lines is still in its original location up in Raleigh, but they also have a place at, like, you know, Kirby and Quince or whatever, which is a little bit more newer growth East Memphis.
Right.
Broadway also opened a location. There's a second location right in the Poplar Corridor. But Broadway also saw the city change around them by standing still on Broad Avenue. I do think that that's an interesting story in its own right.
People can read that piece. And then there's a separate piece where you are a guide to pizza places. And it all of this underlines...
Yeah, this is the first of three. It's a three-part guide. So we'll have one, another tomorrow, and another, I think, on Saturday.
And it all underlines one of the points you make, that there is no bad pizza town. Like, there's so many... Like, you're having to do a three-part series on the Memphis pizza places, broken up thematically,
and we're going to leave places out.
And you're going to leave places out that people are going to get mad about. There's already places in today's piece that I'd never even heard of, and now I do want to go to them all. So how did you break them up thematically, and what is today's?
Yeah, you know, we sort of modeled this after the coffee shop guide I did a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
The coffee shop guide I did it geographically, and that's a more satisfying way to break things up, but it's Impossible Pizza because, like, we're going to have a separate Memphis Pizza Cafe entry in every section and a separate X-Lines in every section and because of the chain. So.
Right.
We broke it up thematically, and it's sort of a rough thematic breakup. Go with us a little bit. But the one today we're calling Classic Pizza Parlors, and these are locally owned places that are pizza-oriented. They're not restaurants that have pizza in addition to other stuff. They are pizza places. They are locally owned, and they only have one or two locations. So that is what is today.
So is Memphis Pizza Cafe in this? But they're not.
No, because they have more than two locations.
Limited to two locations,
yeah.
Basically.
And so tomorrow we'll do chains and by the slice places. So we'll have chains, places that have more than two locations, like Memphis Pizza Cafe and Garibaldi's will be tomorrow. And then places that are more like New York style, go in and grab a slice places like Little Italy. That'll be tomorrow as well. And then the third guide will be places that are more full-scale restaurants that have good pizza in addition to, like, other parts of the menu, but that are not expressly pizza places.
Are you including national chains? No.
No, not like Domino's Pizza Hut.
Good. Thank God. Yes, right.
Yeah,
no, right.
We do have, like, you know, Slim and Huskies, which has a Nashville-based place that has a Memphis location. Lost Pizza, which started in Mississippi and is now sort of a regional chain that has Memphis locations. And then Rotolo's, which I'm not sure where it's based out of, but it has a couple of Memphis locations. But the national, like, pizza fast food chains, no, we're not doing that.
All right, you can read all of that at the Daily Memphian. I love pizza, and you will, God, there's so many places you got to try. Okay, onward to the NBA. Game tonight, obviously in Minnesota. I mean, there are a lot of things that went into that win the other night for the Timberwolves. But some of it's literally just Karl-Anthony Towns making shots that he normally makes that he had not made during the series and did the other night, right? I mean, isn't that, like, a lot of it?
Yeah, it's not like Dallas. It's only series that, like, you know, they're not like blowouts, right?
Right.
I mean, these are competitive games that Dallas is winning. And so it doesn't feel like this series should be a sweep, you know? It feels like it should be a competitive series. And so it's not surprising to see Minnesota win a game. It won't be surprising to see them win tonight. It won't be surprising to see them win any individual game.
Right.
It will be surprising to see them win four games in a row, which is what they have to do.
Right. Do you credit the defensive switch that they made, putting... McDaniels on Kyrie, was that like, it's obviously one of the adjustments that they made seemed to work. Kyrie had an off night relative to what he had been doing. Do you like that?
Yeah, but I think it's less tactical, and that's part of it. But I think it's more, it's a combination of, A, Dallas lost Derek Lively, who I think is really effective for them. I think that's a big loss for Dallas. And then I think Minnesota just amped up their defensive intensity in a way they did right out of the gate against Denver. I think they came out of that Denver series with maybe some, I'm just guessing here, but some combination of exhaustion and overconfidence, right? And I don't think they came into this series.
You said that before game one, honestly. You said that before game one. Yeah.
I just don't think they came into the series with that chip on our shoulder, we are going to devour you defensively mentality that, like they came into the Denver series with. And I think they to me, that the last game, like, because they had Luka really frustrated right out of the jump in that game with their physicality. And that was the first game where they summoned that. I think there's a good chance they summoned it back home. Because the crowd, and we saw it 2 years ago during the playoffs when the Grizzlies were here. Like that, when that crowd gets going, I mean, of the, all the Grizzlies playoff series of this iteration, the Minnesota games were louder than the Los Angeles or Golden State games. So maybe they get it tonight, and then it gets really interesting with the Game 6 in Dallas. It's very possible.
Another theme has been a, and I'm sure you appreciate this, a growing appreciation of Kyle Anderson and the work that he has done. It's tricky for Minnesota because there's this feeling like, how can you play him alongside Rudy Gobert, right? Like, do you have, and yet they have won the minutes he's been on the floor. And he is an ability to he's given Luka maybe more trouble than maybe anybody else on the Timberwolves. Your thoughts on Kyle?
There's this clip from the last game that my friend Keith Parrish, aka Fast Break Breakfast, tweeted out.
Yeah.
And it's literally a possession, half-court possession. Kyle Anderson is almost basically pushing Karl-Anthony Towns to a spot on the floor. And then he's yelling at Anthony Edwards and pointing for Anthony Edwards to where he needs to pass the ball.
Right.
And then after the pass, Anderson sets the screen that creates the open shot. Like, him and Conley, and this sounds maybe a little homerish because they're both former Grizzlies players, but those guys have, like, hyper-elevated basketball IQs. And the thing about Anderson is that he's not good at shooting jump shots. Yeah. He is good at everything else, physically and mentally, on the basketball floor.
It is kind of interesting to think, you look back at that, De'Anthony Melton, Kyle Anderson, like they were winning basketball players. And
this won't happen, but Anderson's a free agent this summer. I'd go offer him the taxpayer mid-level and say, please come back. You'll find a way to help us. You put him on your basketball team, he will find a way to help your basketball team.
Chris, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.